Chapter 17. The mason was at length believed of no more count than he conceived, and soon began to lose the fame that late had gathered round his name. Time passed, and like a living thing the pile went on embodying, and workmen died, and young ones grew, and the old mason sank from view, and abbots Wigmore and Staunton went, and Horton sped the embellishment. But not till years had far progressed chanced it that, one day, much impressed, standing within the well-graced aisle, he asked who first conceived the style, and some decrepit sage detailed how, when invention not availed, the cloud-cast waters in their whim came down, and gave the hint to him who struck each arc, and made each mold, and how the abbot would not hold a soul begetter him who applied forms the Almighty sent as guide, and how the master lost renown, and wore in death no artist's crown. Then Horton, who in inner thought had more perceptions than he taught, replied, art can but transmute. Invention is not absolute. Things fail to spring from naught at call, and art beginnings most of all. He did but what all artists do, wait upon nature for his cue. Had you been here to tell them so, Lord Abbot, 60 years ago, the mason, now long underground, doubtless a different fate had found. He passed into oblivion dim, and none knew what became of him. His name? 'Twas of some common kind and now has faded out of mind. The abbot. He shall not be hid. I'll trace it. But he never did. When longer yet dank death had wormed the brain wherein the style had germed, from Gloucester Church it flew afar the style called perpendicular. To Winton and to Westminster it ranged, and grew still bodifuller. From Solway Frith to Dover Strand its fascination starred the land, not only on cathedral walls, but upon courts and castle halls, till every edifice in the isle was patterned to no other style, until, long having played its part, the curtain fell on Gothic art. Well, when in Wessex on your rounds, take a brief step beyond its bounds, and enter Gloucester. Seek the coin where choir and transept interjoin, and, gazing at the forms there flung against the sky by one, unsung, the OG arches transom topped, the tracery stalks by spandrels stopped, petrified lacework lightly lined on ancient massiveness behind, muse, that some mind so modest be as to renounce fame's fairest fee, like him who crystallized on this spot his visionings, but lies forgot, and many a medieval one whose symmetry salute the sun, while others boom a baseless claim, and upon nothing rear a name. The Jubilee of a magazine, to the editor, yes. Your updated modern page all flower fresh, as it appears, can claim a time-tried lineage, that reaches backward 50 years, which, if but short for sleepy squires, is much in magazines' careers. Here, on your cover, never tires the sower, reaper, thresher, while us through the seasons of our sires, each wills, to work in ancient style with seedlip, sickle, share and flail, though modes have since moved many a mile. The steel-roped plow now rips the veil, with cog and tooth the sheaves are one-wired wheels drum out the wheat like hail. But if we ask, what has been done to unify the mortal lot since your bright leaves first saw the sun, beyond mechanic furtherance what advance can rightness, candor, claim? Truth bends abashed, and answers not. Despite your volume's gentle aim, to straighten visions wry and wrong, events jar onward much the same. Had custom tended to prolong, as on your golden page ingrained, old processes of blade and prong, and best invention been retained for high crusades to lessen tears throughout the race, the world had gained. But too much, this, for 50 years. The satin shoes, if ever I walk to church to wed, as other maidens use, and face the gathered eyes, she said, LL go in satin shoes. She was as fair as early day shining on meads and moan, and her sweet syllables seemed to play like flute notes softly blown. The time arrived when it was meet that she should be a bride. The satin shoes were on her feet, her father was at her side. They stood within the dairy door, and gazed across the green. The church loomed on the distant moor, but rain was thick between. The grass path hardly can be stepped. The lane is like a pool. Her dream is shown to be inept. Her wish they overrule. To go forth shod in satin soft a coach would be required. For thickest boots the shoes were doffed, those shoes her soul desired. Dot dot, all day the bride, as overborne, was seen to brood apart, and that the shoes had not been worn sat heavy on her heart. From her wrecked dream, as months flew on, her thought seemed not to range. What ails the wife? They said anon, had she should be so strange? Dot dot dot, ah, what coach comes with furtive glide, a coach of closed-up kind? It comes to fetch the last year's bride, who wanders in her mind. She strove with them, and fearfully ran stairward with one low scream. Nay, coax her, said the madhouse man, if some old household theme. If you will go, dear, you must fain put on those shoes the pair meant for your marriage, which the rain forbade you then to wear. She clapped her hands, flushed joyous hues. Yes, I'll up and ride, if I am to wear my satin shoes, and be a proper bride. Out then her little foot held she, as to depart with speed. The madhouse man smiled pleasantly, to see the wile succeed. She turned to him when all was done, and gave him her thin hand, exclaiming like an enraptured one, his time it will be grand. She mounted with a face elate, shut was the carriage door. They drove her to the madhouse gate, and she was seen no more. Dot dot, yet she was fair as early day shining on meads and moan, and her sweet syllables seemed to play like flute notes softly blown. Exeunt omnes, I, everybody else, then, going, and I still left where the fair was? Dot dot dot, much have I seen of neighbor loungers making a lusty showing, each now past all knowing. Two, there is an air of blankness in the street and the littered spaces. Thoroughfare, steeple, bridge and highway wizen themselves to lankness. Kennels dribble dankness. Three, folk all fade. And whither, as I wait alone where the fair was? Into the clammy and numbing night fog whence they entered hither. Soon do I follow thither. June 2, 1913. A poet. Attentive eyes, fantastic heed, assessing minds, he does not need, nor urgent writs to supper dine, nor pledges in the roseate wine. For loud acclaim he does not care by the august or richer fare, nor for smart pilgrims from afar, curious on where his hauntings are. But sooner or later, when you hear that he has doffed this wrinkled gear, some evening, at the first star ray, come to his graveside, pause and say, whatever the message is to tell, two bright souled women loved him well. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.